From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
For the week of November 14, 2005, it is the Disc Golf News. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks for joining us. And man, isn't the internet cool? I mean, now all sorts of people are starting to listen to the radio on the internet, and I was listening to some internet radio on a telephone the other day. It's cool stuff. Coming up in the show this time, Stork is with us this week. Dan Roddick, number PDGA 003, is here to promote the preservation of disc golf history.
I think it really is a time to start thinking about preserving such things. And I think it's important even for that to go down to the local and club level.
Also this week, pro player Kevin McCoy has a favorite shot to get out of trouble. It's called the Thumber, sometimes the Thumbahawk or Tomahawk, he'll explain. And news of a brand new program, it's the National Disc Golf Center Endowment Fund. We'll tell you about that, along with results from the Texas 10 Charity Cup. It's all on the way this week on PDGA Radio News, brought to you by Discovering the World at DTWorld.com and Innova Champion Discs at InnovaDiscs.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with the new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
You know, if only this game were easy, then we could all put a whooping on our friends every weekend, but only a few can do so, and here's who did it last weekend in Live Oak, Texas at the Texas 10 Charity Cup. We begin with the Masters, and Glenn Hale out of Austin comes and shoots himself 8-under in the first round. Very nice. But he stumbles in the second, opens the door to James McCain. They end up tied after regulation. McCain wins the playoff. Hale second place. Jerry Perez Sr. takes third in the Masters. In the women's division, Des Redding dominates this field. She wins by 15 throws over Mel Ring, who will take second place over Danielle Vargas. She gets third. In the open division, Coda Hadfield out of Oklahoma shoots himself a bunch under in the first. Looks like he's going to close to victory, and yes, he does. He's going to win it by three over Dagan Owen of Austin. He'll take second. Joel Kelly coming out of the Masters to take third in the open. That's the Texas 10. Time for the 60-second clinic, and this week, a shot familiar to you if you are an experienced player. You've seen it before if you don't throw it yourself. It can be a strain on the shoulder, but man, is it handy to get out of trouble. Some people call it the Thumber or the Thumbahawk or the Tomahawk in certain situations. To explain more, here's professional disc golfer Kevin McCoy.
I really like throwing forehand, you know, even if it's Tomahawk, if it's a Thumber. Typical baseball throw, you know, I played baseball in college, so I, you know, it's my arm's already conditioned for those kind of shots. Even if I'm just throwing a two-finger flex shot with a stable disc to make a big S shot, I really like throwing it four-handed. But the Tomahawk, Thumber, Pancake, whatever people want to call it, it's definitely the best shot to get out of trouble because it's fairly accurate. The only problem is the distance control. If you pretty much line up your target, if you're throwing it with a Thumber, you pretty much just aim 10 feet to the left where you want to end up. If you're throwing it with two fingers inside for a Tomahawk, you just aim 10 to 20 feet to the right, and it seems to land on my target every time. So I don't know if maybe it's the disc I'm throwing or angle or whatever, but it just seems like those two shots seem to work real well to get out of trouble.
Professional disc golfer Kevin McCoy finished in fifth place a couple of weeks back at the Veterans Park Open in Arlington, Texas.
Hi, this is Barry Schultz, and you are listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture, Stork is back. As the season winds down and the radio season winds down, we wanted to present what has become a three-part series with Dan Roddick. And it came about like this. I asked Stork recently, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? And he says, well, I've been thinking about the past. I said, okay. And then he said, and I've been thinking about the present. All right.
And he says, I've been thinking about the future. Well, we have a lot to talk about. So this week we are going to focus on the past and specifically preserving disc golf's history. Now let me kind of put this into perspective for you. Recently I moved after living in one place for like 6 years. And during that time I was very heavily involved in the PDGA and disc golf. And during the move, I recycled probably close to 70, 80 pounds of paper alone, most of it having to do with disc golf. And at the time, I'm like, phew, get this out of here. After talking with Stork, I thought maybe I should have hung on to at least some of that. Here's Stork to explain what he's talking about.
Yeah, just over the last, I guess, month or so, I've been thinking a good bit about the past of our various disc sports, because I hear different people in different disciplines talking about it, and maybe it's because we're coming up on something like 40 years of doing a number of these things. I guess the first disc golf competition was in something like 69, and it also was a fit with the visit down to the National Disc Golf Center, and the fact that we're beginning there to start the first of a real archive for disc sports. It's a Matt Gillis project right now. It's on his plate. And, of course, we have the Steady Ed Museum that is slated to be there, and the placement of the Disc Golf Hall of Fame. So it's really the first time we have a physical place to start gathering the materials, and I don't think any of the other disc sports have that yet. I know WFDF doesn't. UPA may, but I don't know how formalized a thing that is for them. But I think it's important for us to think about this a little bit, because we're at a time frame where, just actuarially speaking, we still have a number of the principals around, the people who started these things. And some of the materials and even the oral history of what we've done goes away easily. And so I think it really is a time to start thinking both generally and locally about preserving such things. And I think it's important even for that to go down to the local and club level. And I don't know how many clubs have, for instance, historians within their organizations, but I think it's time to begin contemplating that, because a lot of the things that will be important down the line have a way of evaporating, particularly when the original movers and shakers move on. Let's say they die, and then their kids don't know what this stuff is, and the boxes go out to the Salvation Army, and in there are original course maps for the first tournament and scores and some original equipment and that sort of thing that obviously we'd love to have down the line. It also seems clear that we've got to get to the point where we're doing a professional job of archiving materials, because some of these are fragile. Some of the original equipment is delicate. And ironically, the way the sport is documented now makes this even more challenging, because a lot of the events we have, and of course we have more and more, and the velocity of that is increasing. Tournaments can come and go so quickly that they may just be a website for a period of time, and we don't really have any general technique of archiving that material. And so the pitch for an event comes up, the maps are there, the results go up, and a month later, poof, that's gone. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that two things that people can start to focus on. One is thinking about getting some really key materials to the museum. We're not quite ready to be taking that stuff on now, but it's time to start kind of identifying such things. And the second one is to think about preserving local history of clubs and courses, because I think ultimately most of this archiving will ideally be digital and networked, so that a person could click through, let's say, to a Sedgley Woods site and be able to access a fairly rich collection of their information when one's searching on the history of disc golf, and then Eastern disc golf, and then Pennsylvania disc golf, and that sort of thing. So I just have a sense that if we don't begin to think about it pretty clearly now, we could lose a lot of things in the shuffle before we get focused.
So then you're suggesting the best way for folks on the local club level to archive, or at least begin to archive, this information is doing it digitally. So, for example, this was a flyer from a tournament we did, you know, 5 years ago. I'm going to scan that and tuck it away and that sort of thing.
I think that's really the ideal thing, in that obviously preserving the original is a great thing, but it's so few people can access that directly. Whereas if you do have it in a medium that can be broadly shared, then of course it's a much more powerful piece of information, and that's the way research is done these days. But I think the main thing initially is to identify these pieces that, as I say, may be at this point in the bottom of trunks and may be candidates to get lost in the shuffle of people who don't really know what they're looking at. And so I guess it's principally a call for people who have and know about such things to somehow get them in the hands of people that will be able to preserve them adequately.
Is there a name for this campaign? Have you thought it through that much?
Preserving the past.
The Disc Golf Historical Project, perhaps.
Well, I think that eventually the center point of this effort for disc golf is clearly going to be at the National Disc Golf Center. And that's going to be a big advantage to have a central physical point. And there are a good many materials that have already been collected that have kind of brought into the magnet, particularly of the Hall of Fame. But I think the main thing at this point is for people to be aware of the value of those items, and start to think about preserving them locally, and then keep your eye on the way things develop at the National Disc Golf Center. And I believe that is going to turn into a really rich resource for all of us, and one that will help us down the line really appreciate where we've been in the game.
I think if we're going to plant this seed today, it would be a good idea for us to give some, you know, a nice, you know, fairly short but nonetheless concrete list of some of the things that might be valuable to us in the future, so people can be thinking specifically about the kind of items that you have in mind.
Oh, well, that is an interesting thought. Actually, I just had an email exchange and conversation with a fellow the other day that had an odd target on his course, and he was inquiring as to what the history was of it, and it turns out that it was a local production, I think from the 70s, and of course there were a number of different kinds of targets that were used prior to the disc bowl hole and its variations. And so probably let's take equipment as one of the categories. I mean, obviously we're interested in the important developments of various discs that have been used. And some of those are preserved through the Technical Standards Committee of PDGA. Jeff Homburg has been heading that up for years. And he does, as part of that process, collect discs that are approved for play. So we have a certain amount of that developed. But on the other hand, of course, there are discs that were made up for particular events and for clubs. They're of interest, both artistically and historically and technically, in terms of the development of flight characteristics of the discs. But then, of course, the equipment on the other end, the targets, that's interesting in itself. When we had the AFDO in 1974, I think, in Rochester, Jim Palmieri had ground boxes for that championship. I don't know if he still has any. Maybe up in his attic there are a couple of them. If there are, it would be interesting to have that. And in fact, I've talked with Matt Gillis at the center, and I guess there's some possibility that we might be interested in having kind of a putting park where people could go through and see some of the historical developments of targets that have been used in the game and putt at them and see, you know, what's a saucer golf basket look like, that the cone-shaped one that I'm sure you remember. And there was the hoser basket and a number of different things that I think would be of pretty high interest. But, of course, if Palmieri uses the last of his ground baskets for kindling, then we won't have that. So there's some of the things. The other, of course, are more informational, like original layouts for courses, original arrangements for tournaments, particularly if they had ground rules that were unusual, just to see the nature of the development of the rules, playing lists for, you know, who was in that Craig Meier tournament that was one of the first PGA meets on the East Coast. What were the results? And all those things that are floating around somewhere, but we may not necessarily have them captured.
Dan Roddick is PDGA Director of Special Projects. We spoke to him at his home office in Pasadena, California. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
Discovering the World has long been the leader in mail-order disc services, with the largest selection of professional and recreational flying disc products, plus PDGA merchandise. Discovering the World is a great place to find the disc you need for the sport you love. Online orders ship within 24 hours, and the new retail location is open 7 days a week to handle all your flying disc needs. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com. Discovering the World.
Well, as the holidays grow nearer, the number of PDGA tournaments grows thinner. But there still are some things going on this weekend, November 19th and 20th. In La Mirada, California, it's the SoCal Championships. Good luck to everyone there. In Kentucky, the Zilla Sports Greater Louisville Open this weekend. Durham, North Carolina, hosting the Bull City Showdown. In South Carolina, it's the City of Orangeburg Championships. Winfield, Kansas, hosting the Turkey Shoot. That is a Katrina relief effort, and thanks to the folks there for putting that on. And in South Carolina, don't miss the DiscGolfIllustrated.com Championships this weekend. Looking for more information? Well, you can find it anytime. Just point your browser to PDGA.com. And finally this week, as you probably already have some idea of if you came to the website to check out the radio show, a brand new endowment fund to help fund the PDGA National Disc Golf Center, the brand new huge mecca facility that is now going in Columbia County, Georgia. And, of course, it's a big facility, and it's going to be a lot of dough. So we need to raise some money, and that's where you and I come in making contributions to the endowment fund. Now, these are tax deductible, and you can make the contribution in your name or maybe in your company's name or in memory of someone who is important to your club or the growth of disc golf or whatever. It's all good, and it's all going to support the National Disc Golf Center. Now, important question. Well, what kind of contribution is the PDGA looking for? Well, let me tell you, you can be a friend of the National Disc Golf Center for a mere $100, and that's pretty cool all in itself. Let's say you got a little deeper pockets, you know? You want maybe a T sign, or how about a T pad? You want a T pad in your company's name. Well, $500, boom, that's done. And that, you know, that thing's going to be there for time immemorial, and you'll be there as the sponsor. Now, let's say you've got really deep pockets. You're sitting on that winning lottery ticket or something. You could be a diamond sponsor for a gift of $25,000 or more. For that, boom, you got a whole course named after you. Now think about that. There's more information available at the website, pdga.com. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of November 14th. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Innova Champion Discs and Discovering the World. And until next week, I hope you will get out there, huck some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.